Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Tinker Talks podcast. I'm Clayton Cummins, a member of the 72nd Air Base Wing Public Affairs Office here at Tinker Air Force Base. And, do we have a podcast for you today? It involves me traveling. We're on the what I call the other side of the base, one of the more iconic parts of the base, if you will, here at the Oklahoma City Air Logistics Complex with Colonel Jeffrey Anderson. He is the deputy commander here at the OCALC. Sir, good afternoon, good morning, whatever time it is. I think we've reached...
still morning. We just clicked over to the afternoon. Good afternoon.
Reached the afternoon hour. It's a pleasure to have you join us today for the podcast.
Yeah, well, thanks. It's a pleasure to join you guys. Thanks for the opportunity to chat with you today. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. So before we get to business, I want to take some time to get to know you a little bit. I'm sure some folks have heard about you. Tell us about yourself. You were telling me before we started recording that you are a military child. You are from all over the place.
Yeah, I am actually. Grew up in the military, lived all over the world, born overseas. My dad was in the Air Force. He flew F-15s and RF-4s. And so I've lived in a lot of places, settled down mostly in Florida. So when people ask me where I'm from, I tell them I'm mostly from Florida. I went to middle school, high school, and college there. But none of my family live there anymore, so they've all migrated to the upper Midwest. But I still call Florida home. So, yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
I like that. I'm a civilian here in the Air Force, but I always like to ask uniform, you know, what made you join the Air Force? Each person I've asked have always told a different and inspiring story. I'm just curious what brought you. It sounded like it's in your blood.
Yeah, definitely. So my grandpa was actually a bomber pilot in World War II. My dad was a fighter pilot in the Air Force for 20 years, and it was something I knew I was always going to do growing up. I always wanted to be a part of something that was bigger than myself, and the Air Force gave me that opportunity. I wanted to travel the world and see cool things and be a part of a great team, and that's what I got when I joined the Air Force. I've seen a lot of amazing parts of our country, and I've been a part of some really amazing teams, and so I joined because I wanted to be a part of something bigger than myself, and that's what the Air Force gave me. So I've really enjoyed my 22 years now in the Air Force. So yeah, that's why. It's family, and I always knew I wanted to do it.
Yeah. Other than your time at Tinker, do you have a favorite spot?
So this is our 10th assignment now. I can't say I really have one favorite spot. We've lived in a lot of really cool places. We've lived in some difficult and challenging places. I probably would say my favorite spot, if I had to pick one, was Montana. It was my first duty station. Okay. And that's actually where I met my wife. So she was in grad school at the time. She's from Boston originally, was out visiting her sister who was stationed at Malmstrom Air Force Base with her husband. And that's where I was stationed at the time and we met. And we had a really great time exploring the Pacific Northwest. And so I would say Montana is definitely my favorite. If I go back to Montana, I would. It's a beautiful place.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful part of our country.
I've heard. We are approaching the fall season, if you will. Summer's kind of wrapping up. We're approaching football season.
Yeah.
And on behalf of Okies listening, I have to ask, are you going into this football season an OU or OSU fan, sir?
Yeah, that's a tough question. Since I'm not from Oklahoma, I don't fully appreciate the rivalry. I did get to go to an OU game, though, last year. So UCF actually played OU last season, and UCF almost beat OU. It was a fantastic game because I'm a UCF grad, so I'm a through and through a UCF fan. But if I had to pick one team, I would probably pick OU. I know a lot of folks that are OU grads or supporters. One of my closest friends here is an OU fan, and so I think I would probably lean towards OU if I had to pick one.
Some fist bumps in the gallery over here.
I see that.
Well, hey, I do want to talk about business while you're here. You are the deputy commander, as we talked about earlier here at the OCALC. Can you walk me through, for folks who aren't familiar, what exactly that role serves here?
Yeah, so as the deputy commander, I work directly for General Moore, who's the complex commander. And technically, my job is to advise and assist General Moore and Mr. Laughlin, who's the executive director of the complex. And so one of the great things about my job is I have no authority. My position comes with no authority. I'm here to advise and assist the boss and do everything I can to help make our team successful. And that gives me a lot of freedom to kind of go out and roam and attack problems and work with the entire team to make sure that we're all successful. And so boss gives me great direction and gives me a lot of opportunity and space to go out and really get after what's challenging us the most across the complex. And so I spend my time, as much time as I can, out in the production areas working with our teams and seeing what we can do from the complex level to make the rest of the complex successful, and learning as much as I can. Because quite honestly, I've worked in the complex for a year. Prior to arriving last summer, I had not worked in an air logistics complex before, and so there's a lot of learning that had to occur on my end to get up to speed. There's an entire new language within the depot that doesn't exist out in the operational Air Force, and there isn't a great appreciation in line maintenance units about what's happening at the complex. And so there was a lot of learning. There still is a lot of learning on my end on a daily basis to do as much as I can to help the team, but it's been enjoyable. But that's really what it comes down to. I'm here to advise and assist the boss and do whatever I can do to make sure the team is as successful as we can be.
And, you know, sir, what a privilege that has to be, right? I mean, you are seeing the workforce with your own two eyes right up in all of the action. Is there something that being in this role that you have been so far for the year, is there something that surprised you maybe walking the aisles here, the ALC, that maybe you didn't expect?
So, I think probably the thing that stands out the most is the depth of experience and commitment to production efforts across the senior civilian leaders in the depot is really impressive. There's a lot of really amazing folks that work in the complex, and they really don't need me or the boss or Mr. Laughlin out there prodding them to do the right things. They are motivated and dedicated and committed to making their teams better and successful, and they're really good at it. They really just need support from above their level when they ask for it. And in a sense, they just need us to kind of get out of their way and give them the runway they need to get after their problems. They do need support every once in a while, but I've been really impressed with the professionalism of the senior civilian leaders across the complex. There's some really fantastic folks that work here that are really good at their job and have a ton of context and know-how for depot operations. So that's been really cool to see. You see it, you know, when you work in flightline operations and other maintenance units, you see it with your senior enlisted, senior master sergeants and chiefs, how experienced and skilled they are, and being able to see that in the depot side from the senior civilians you have here, from the shop floor up to the group director level. It's been really cool to see that, and refreshing, to be honest with you, because that's what makes the complex run, is that experience and that commitment. It's not what I'm doing or General Moore's doing. It's the folks that are down in the shops really, really making the production effort a reality. So that's been cool to see that.
It is a well-oiled machine, I can
tell
you that.
Yeah, absolutely, definitely.
Folks that may have been associated with or familiar with AFSC may have heard of Produce to Promise. In your kind of definition, what does that mean?
So when we talk about Produce to Promise within the ALC, we see that as our responsibility to our customers and our partners, the program executive officers and offices, to produce what we've promised on time and on cost. Our mission is to produce combat ready air power. And when our warfighters need a requirement fulfilled, we consider that a promise made, and it's our job to produce it. So that's what Produce to Promise means, at least in my mind, from the ALC perspective.
In layman's terms, it's that guarantee.
Yeah. Yep.
How is the ALC improving its processes to meet the expectation, the produce to promise requirements, and make sure that the timely, the cost-effective delivery of services to the warfighters is is met. I know that kind of sounds like a lot of words. It's probably easier said than done. But how are we meeting, stepping up to meet that challenge?
Yeah, so I think the really simple answer to that is we use AOP principles to meet warfighter requirements. AOP is a management system that we've used starting back in the 2012 timeframe. And I would say the short answer is AOP is our guiding principles in how we do that.
Yeah, AOP being art of the possible. I'm sure a lot of folks in AFSC have heard of art of the possible, know what it does, know its capabilities. But could you explain for folks that may not be familiar with art of the possible what it is, where it kind of came from, and how much of a game changer it's been for the air logistics complex here in Oklahoma City?
So AOP is the how we operate within AFSC. AOP is a constraint-based management system designed to create a workforce culture that's focused on efficient process execution. It's about challenging each other to recognize opportunities, eliminate constraints, improve processes, and optimize resources that help us achieve world-class results. It's really about reaching beyond today's limitations to grasp at previously unimagined heights of performance. And it's designed to allow us to define complex systems in simple terms that can be analyzed, communicated, and improved. It gives us tools to simplify processes so that we can identify constraints. And then once those constraints are identified, specific focusing steps are used to resolve those constraints. Before 2012, if you were to ask anybody across the 27 operating locations within AFSC, what's the management system that you use, you'd probably get a variety of different answers. And so AOP is really the management system that we use across the entire center. And so that we're all using a common management system. We can communicate using identical terms. You can go from Robbins to Tinker to Hill and see AOP in execution, and it will be consistent across all those different operating locations. It really drives us to use data and facts to make management decisions on how to improve machine production versus relying on a gut feeling or what we think may be wrong. Or what our sense may be telling us. It really focuses us in on what the true constraint is and allows us to tackle those constraints and overall improve the machine performance.
Fact data, I'm sure that it has to help a great deal in efficiency, but I think there's something to be said too about the communication aspect of it. The fact that everyone's speaking the same language, I'm sure you notice the benefits of that right away.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, so I think you'll see AOP is very mature in a lot of areas of the complex, and it's also in its infant stages in some of the other areas. Everybody's on their own AOP journey, and I think what's also great is that you're starting to see implementation of AOP across a lot of the airbase wings as well, and so. Utilizing AOP in a staff function or in staff areas can be a little bit daunting because it's not always as clear cut as it can be when you're using it with a production machine. But we're starting to see a lot of success made and progress made in some of our staff functions, also in the ALC, but also across some of the airbase wings where we're starting to see some fantastic implementation efforts of AOP there. And again, it's that common language. Calming operating principles that allow us to use examples of success across the complex and allow people to see, hey, that could actually work in my area. Yeah. And I can see the tangible benefits of implementing AOP in what I do on a daily basis and to get that buy-in from the team, because it's the team that's really doing the work to make it happen, and they've got to understand and see the benefits, the tangible benefits that they're going to gain from it to really be bought in to make it successful.
Yeah. And you mentioned, everyone is sort of on their own individual AOP, Art of the Possible journey, including the ALC here.
Yeah, yeah.
How has the ALC adopted and or, maybe even overhauled AOP to make it better?
Yeah, so we have several efforts across the ALC to work on continuing to improve our own AOP culture, if you will. So, you know, first off, we're reviewing several processes in our AOP journey. Leadership is the key to creating the environment for success and the implementation and the sustainment of AOP. So we've done a complete review of our leadership training and feedback loops to make sure the training that we provide to our team is meeting the needs that they have to be successful in their AOP journey. A second area that we've worked on is the overhaul of our Andon system. The Andon system is the constraint elevation process for the enterprise. And so we went through an enterprise values stream mapping event, and that was conducted with key stakeholders to identify gaps and improvements, along with an overhaul of the Andon database by the 72nd Air Base Wing. So we've made software improvements to meet the customer demands, along with dashboard development for leadership. So we have a summary of critical trends to help us identify where risk can be mitigated. The third thing that we've looked at is the fact that our customer requirements and the burning platforms change. We looked at a complete review of our Road 2 goals to ensure that those goals align with the warfighter needs and that we're communicating those goals back to the enterprise to ensure that all the stakeholders are in agreement and that they're managing to the same goal. That Road 2 goal is the first step in managing our process machines. And sometimes you have to re-baseline that benchmark to make sure that we're all marching to the right target based off of the changing environments that we continue to operate across. And then our fourth key effort in the overhaul of AOP within the complex is we have a quest across ALC to become to transform into a digital depot, right? There's a lot of amazing technologies and efforts that we can start to incorporate into what's happening at Oak City. And so we're on this other journey to become a digital depot. And one of those efforts is developing a digital walk the wall. And so a walk the wall is a management-led brief on the process, on the status of process machines with enterprise participation to communicate performance, constraints, and then mitigation efforts. So in the past, this data was a snapshot in time, and it was printed out on plotter paper and then taped up to a wall for the team to stand up in front of and brief how that machine is performing. And so what we're doing now is bringing on the real-time data from our systems into the walk-the-wall process and using, you know, big screens that are displaying the real-time data of that machine, and then that's being briefed. So instead of talking about information that may be a couple of days old, you're looking at the real-time data. So where we can, where the systems allow us to, moving to a digital walk-the-wall process has been a big, it's actually really cool to see the teams doing it, and we're still able to do that with all our enterprise partners, because in those walk-the-walls, you got to have the supply chain team, DLA, and the 448, so and the SPO, and all those key partners. So we're able to incorporate all that into that process, yeah, which is really cool.
And, you know, AOP, it was, you know, kind of made its debut really not that long ago, but it's been amazing to see everyone jumping on board and amazing to see the effects from that, the positive effects from that. Can you explain how the ALC is implementing or using AOP to improve processes, drive production? Is there anything that kind of sticks out to you, I guess, when asking that question?
Yeah, there's several examples that we'll touch on, but like I said, everybody is on their own journey for AOP. Some folks are very advanced, have been running AOP machines for a decade and longer, and some folks are just starting that journey. And so you can see different levels of progress throughout the complex, which is great. And when we go out and do the walk the wall, so the leadership team in the complex every Thursday, you know, our goal is to get out every Thursday and go to the walk the wall meetings that are occurring across the complex and drop in and just see how the team is doing and just to listen to the team go through that process. Not that we're there for them to brief us, but so that we can see, hey, how are you running your walk the wall and how is this effort going? It really allows us to see the different levels of maturity across the complex. Ways that we're using AOP to improve our production machines, the B-52 PDM machine down in our AMXG, Just went through an EVSM effort with the entire enterprise that was led by General Moore and had SES and GEO participation from all enterprise partners. Based off of some of the significant challenges that PDM machine is facing with the condition of the aircraft, some of the engine constraints that they have, some of the facility constraints that they have, some of the constraints that they're working through in their postdoc and FCF gate, we determined, hey, we need to have a holistic look at this machine. And so the AOP tenets, you know, drive you to do an EVSM. And so we had four major events within that EVSM that looked at all the primary major constraints. We had dedicated teams and champions for each of those events to bring together all the key stakeholders to make sure that we were having a holistic discussion about what was really impacting the production targets within each of those different areas of the B-52 machine. And to date, they've generated upwards of 70 plus action items that they're currently working through. And as they work through solving some of the problems they've identified in those action items, they should start to see improvement to that overall production machine. And so we're still early in that event for the B-52s, but we do expect that we'll start to see some of the flow day reductions and some of the high WIP levels start to drop as we resolve some of the issues that we've been working through across that machine. Another example is in our MXSG, our maintenance support group. That's the group that's responsible for making sure, in real simple terms, that the entire OCLC complex continues to function and run, that the lights turn on every day when we come to work, and that all our equipment is serviceable and available for us to use. They have a very unique capability within MXSG. They have a construction flight that they can build any sort of facility that you need to within our complex. And the way that they manage their construction projects is called the 304 process. And so we did a review of the 304 production machine. They had a rapid improvement event in April for the sole purpose of scripting large and extra large construction projects. And through that process, they established business rules and they updated their process map to include planned scripts for large and extra large projects that indicated major tasks by skill with start and completion dates. And that ensured that the largest and the most complex construction projects that have standard work and identified process flow, which is a big piece of AOP, is standard work, scripted work, and clear process flow. They were able to create visual displays that identified the sub-gate release points and concurrent work that can be managed at the project level, which is, again, another key tenet of the AOP machines. And then that process improvement provided an executable plan that was transparent to all the stakeholders, and that enabled consistent and predictable execution and constraint identification. So they took that rapid improvement events and drove into their large and extra large construction projects transparency, understanding across the entire team that is working on that project of where the constraints were, where the concurrent work could be undertaken, and really are working on driving improvement to some massive construction projects that they have going on within MXSG. The KC-135 PDM machine is also going through what we call an event-driven plan. So that is a process by which they are identifying major events within their machine that need to be addressed and bring together key stakeholders to focus on improving specific areas within their production machine. And so they've got currently 9 major events wrapped up underneath their event-driven plan with the focus of reducing WIP and flow days. As that machine has encountered some challenges over the last 12 months that include, you know, 10th flight availability, some hazmat material availability, backlast at the end of last summer that produced some constraints and some work stoppage within their machine. So they're going through an event-driven plan process to work on improving their overall machine performance. I think another great example, and this is the last one that I'll use, in our OB office, our OBM office, we have And this is a staff example, if you will. But we have a really amazing team that works down in our OBM office, and they're using AOP concepts and techniques to track 20 different personnel action types, as well as tracking processes for creating and managing position descriptions, position requirement documents, and MCRs and ACRs. So they developed a database that is used to track all the process steps through manual entry. And a powerful dashboard has been developed and improved upon over the last 2 years that allows the OBM analysts and the leaders to track the step-by-step tasks in each process, identify the constraints, and then implement changes that improve the timeliness and efficiency of the various programs. Additionally, the dashboard that they created, it provides simplified data pulls and creates walk-the-wall presentations for over 100 different detailed reports and briefings. And so the impact of the time that they saved through that process, it allowed OBM to stand up additional capabilities and without adding additional personnel. And so they were able to stand up a 2-person community outreach team and a 4-person talent acquisition recruiting team just by the time that they saved in the process streamlining they had throughout their entire shop, which is
remarkable.
Pretty amazing.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's pretty awesome. And so the OBM team continues to make a lot of progress in their AOP journey, and taking AOP concepts and implementing them into their daily practices is really making them more effective and efficient at what they do, which is really what AOP is all about. It's about making us more effective and efficient at what we do, right?
And you can't beat that.
Yeah, you can't. And so doing monotonous staff tasks on a regular basis is challenging, and some of the AOP concepts allow them to identify solutions to some of the constraints and challenges and get after those problems. So,
yeah.
Those are just a couple, those are 4, easy examples of dozens and dozens of efforts happening across the complex on a daily basis. Like I said, people are on a different point in their AOP journey. Some folks are really far along, and sometimes even when you're really far along in your AOP journey, like KC-135s, they're really fantastic PDM machine. They've really kind of been the gold standard for many years, especially here at OCALC. Even some of our best performing lines are going to run into challenges and have issues that they have to try to resolve. That PDM line does it on a regular basis, but sometimes there needs to be a major reset of, okay, we've had a lot of challenges this fiscal year. We've got a big constraint in postdoc currently. Let's go back and kind of re-baseline and look at an EDP-driven sure. event and plan to really get after some of those challenges and see what we can do to knock down those barriers and make that team successful again.
Yeah, being in the role that you are, you've seen how successful AOP can be. You mentioned different folks are on, different parts and points of their, AOP journey. Do you have any advice for somebody who may be not as further along as others that, can kind of help them work through, their AOP journey to get to where they want to go?
Yeah, I think I'd probably say a couple of things. I think first I would say don't be deterred by AOP, because sometimes when you're not as familiar with what AOP is, you get – somebody will hand you, here's the AOP handbook, and you can get that handbook and go, man, this seems like there's a lot to digest here. Yeah. And it can seem overwhelming and complicated and challenging to really understand, how do I do this within my respective area? My advice would be, don't let that deter you from trying. It'll take time to grasp some of the concepts and to figure out, how do I actually do this in my respective work area? But don't be deterred, because there are a lot of really fantastic tools in AOP, and it does work. I've been working in maintenance organizations for 22 years now, and over the course of the last 2 decades, there have been a lot of different systems that we've talked about of how do we improve performance. The proof is in the pudding. When you walk around OCALC, it's apparent that AOP is embedded in everything that we do. And the teams that really adhere to the AOP principles find success in their respective areas. you can't debate that AOP doesn't drive success, because I see it every day. And so I would tell you, just stick with it. I would encourage you to reach out to people that are more comfortable or have more experience in AOP and ask for their advice. I'd also tell you to go walk around and go visit other areas that are, you know, maybe further along their AOP journey, and just watch how they do business. Just from an outsider's perspective, watch how they operate on a regular daily basis, and see where there's commonalities that you could institute and apply to what you do on a daily basis. But don't be deterred. It can certainly feel overwhelming when you talk about AOP from the very beginning and not 100% sure of how it actually works. That's okay. Everybody gets past that point, and just stick with it.
Yeah, it's important to celebrate milestones too.
Yeah,
celebrate
absolutely.
Your successes. Well, hey, Colonel Anderson, I know you are a busy guy. Thanks so much for taking some time to talk to us. Anything else you want to pass along to listeners out there that you'd like to mention at all that we haven't talked about? I know we talked about Produce to Promise, Art of the Possible. Anything else you'd like to pass along?
I don't have any big words of wisdom. I would just say to anybody that's out there listening to this podcast, you're probably interested in what's going on here at the OCALC. You may be a team member here at OCALC. I would just like to thank all the folks that do work in Oklahoma City Air Logistics Complex for what they do on a daily basis. It's not people like me that come to work every day that make this place successful. It's the folks that are out there on the shop floor that are leading in difficult circumstances on a regular basis and making difficult decisions, but leading well. And so I would just say I appreciate everybody that works here at OCALC and what they do every day. It makes a big difference. I've been on the receiving end of the depot product for 20 plus years, and I can't tell you I'm glad to be working on the team now that gets to provide that product to the warfighter, because I was always satisfied with the product I received from the depots, regardless of what the feedback you may get from other people. I was always very happy with the product I received, and I'm glad to be a part of the team that's here now, working every day to make sure our warfighters have what they need to go out and do the nation's bidding when they're asked to do it. So, yeah, that's all I'd say.
It's important stuff. Hey. Colonel Anderson, I want to thank you so much for joining us for this episode of the Tinker Talks podcast. Thank you. Hey, before we go, just want to remind you to subscribe to the Tinker Talks podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure to smash, as the kids, I think, say these days, that subscribe button, so you can stay in the loop with our podcast schedule. And also, don't forget, if you'd like to stay on top of everything, Team Tinker, don't forget to follow us or like us on social media, whatever the platform may be, Facebook, X, Instagram, LinkedIn, YouTube. I think we might even be on MySpace still. I don't know.
Yikes.
Thanks for listening to the Tinker Talks podcast. I hope you have a great rest of your day. Bye-bye.